B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Maz.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two of the program, Felger and Maz, presented by DraftKings here on 98.5 The Sports Hub and a simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. Maz had a couple of items he wanted to get to the last couple of days as it relates to Cam Newton, so let's do it now. The first is something that Phil Perry wrote on NBC Sports Boston, how Cam Newton can help the Patriots offense rediscover situational football success. Why did that stand out to you, Maz?
Well, just because, again, I think it factors Newton's legs into the equation, and there's also this perception that, you know, there's this area with Brady in the clutch and, you know, third down, fourth down in the red zone where Brady was invaluable, and you're never going to replicate that. And the fact of the matter is that last year the Patriots weren't very good in those situations. And according to Phil Perry's story, and this goes back a couple of days, Newton has excelled in those areas. And I just thought that that was interesting. That's all, because I think there is the chance that situationally Cam Newton could be better than Tom Brady was in those spots a year ago. Now, again, it doesn't mean that the offense is better or that Newton's better. My voice is already getting up and I'm getting worked up because I can hear people sniping back. I'm not saying that Cam Newton is better than Tom Brady. I'm just telling you that last year with Brady, the Patriots weren't all that great in those money situations. And our buddy at Boston Sports Inf sent me something yesterday, too, that I think is worthy of note, which is on third and fourth down since 2011. And again, this is the 9-year period that Cam Newton has been in the league. On third and fourth down rushing attempts, Cam Newton has been the most productive runner in the NFL.
Meaning of all positions.
Right. He has the most rush attempts on third and fourth down, the most first downs, and the most touchdowns. So, like, you know, you weigh all of those in and you say that this is a guy who in those spots, and if you think about it, it stands to reason that in those big spots, third and four, third and three, how do you defend him? So if he drops back to pass and everyone drops off, he can run and pick up the three or four pretty easily.
Say that again. So since 2011, the most productive third and fourth down runner, which is defined by what? Picking up the first down or scoring a touchdown?
Right, first down percentage and touchdowns and all that. So again, the way that our buddy at Boston Sports Inf did it was, now Newton also has the most attempts and the most yards. So he runs more than everybody else, but his first down percentage in those situations is also very high. He's not number one in first down percentage, but he's high. More than 60% of the time he picks it up when he runs on third and fourth down. And I just think that, look, the negative with Newton, and we focus on the accuracy stats or the inaccuracy stats and the passing, and those are real, but they're also not totally fair to him because the legs are such a huge part of his game, and particularly in those big spots. Again, third and three, third and four. If you drop off this guy and you give him a lane, he's not getting tackled one-on-one. He's going to pick it up. He'll run the guy over and pick up the first down.
Well, if they still let him play that way or he still wants to play that way, which is, goes back to the thing we started talking about the first day the signing was announced, is that, you know, what's the offense going to be with him? Are they going to let him run? Do they want him to run? Does he want to run? Or does he want to preserve himself? Is he taking too many shots? Can he hold up to the beating? Can, you know, that whole question mark. To me, you run him, you turn him loose. You let him be him. And if I'm him, I'm doing it too, because that's how he's going to have the best year and make the most money. And if this is all about rehabbing his career in one season and then going back to market, that it benefits everyone. So third and four, whatever, third and three, I'm running him, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why are you bringing in Cam Newton?
Well, so that's the thing is if you take away his legs, it really almost defeats the purpose of bringing him here. Unless he somehow transforms into something he's never been before, which under Belichick, I'll actually allow for. Because I think if anybody can tap into that, it's Bill. But to give you a quick number, Newton in those situations, third and fourth down, ran 306 times. He picked up 195 first downs. 195, more than any guy in the league. And so I just think all I'm getting at, Mike, is this. The way we think about quarterback here in New England with Tom Brady This is totally different. You just can't think in those terms. This guy's he plays it a whole different way.
Okay. Second item that we wanted to get to, something Greg Bedard posted. And Greg's going to join us later on in the show. We're going to talk to the big boy. But he wrote something the other day about how Cam Newton's contract, as great as it is, actually might work against the Patriots. What's your thoughts on that, Miss?
So I thought it was a good point, and I hadn't thought of it in these terms, that they gave Newton a guaranteed minimum, $500,000. I mean, they give him pocket change. So what are they going to do now? They're going to go, let's just say they wanted to go out and sign Jadeveon Clowney, okay, which they're not going to do, but let's just say they did. If they give him money, Cam Newton's going to look at him and say, wait a minute, you just told me you didn't have money. You just told me that you were only going to guarantee $500,000 for me. Now you're throwing more money at some of these guys. And Clowney's actually, the more that I think of it, even a bad example. Pick a run-of-the-mill, you know, middle-of-the-road defensive player who's a veteran. What are you going to do? Give him $1.5 million? Three times what you gave Cam Newton? Guaranteed money?
I was going to say, even if you give someone $2.5-3, you don't have to sign Clowney for 12. Sign a guy for $2 or $3, and Cam Newton goes, hey, wait a minute.
I mean, I know if I'm Newton, I'd be pissed at that, going, you got to be kidding me. After the game you played with me, now you're going to go out and give this guy that money? And I do think there is some truth to it. Now, you know, there's always a nuance and gray area, and the Patriots could just easily say, yeah, but your ceiling is higher. If you hit your incentives, you're going to make three times what that guy will. But we all know guaranteed money talks in that league. And I thought it was a good point by Greg that it does, you know, not to mention the fact that now all of a sudden, magically, they've settled a couple of grievances and tacked on $8 million in cap space to their payroll after they've agreed with Newton.
Exactly.
Like, if I were him, I'd be pissed about that.
Exactly. I wonder, you know, I wonder how that's going to play with all the things, you know, the whole tapestry of Cam Newton, how it's going to play, how he's going to handle, and again, I'm going to say this phrased as he, you know, as a player might feel, which is, how is he going to feel now on top of everything else that the team that just signed him screwed him over on the money? Because
that was the first thing I thought of Saturday when that was reported, that they now have all this cap space after those grievances. If I'm Cam Newton, I'm like, I just threw my phone. Like, what?
Because they did. Because you know what the Patriots told him the whole way was that we don't have any money. Yeah. Look at our cap.
Nothing we can do.
We have to sign you for minimum because they have to be not likely to be earned. And it all has to go to next year's cap if you hit anything. And it has to be minimum because look at our money. Look at our cap. So then he signs. And then 5 days later, here comes $7 million. Like, they didn't know. Like, they had just started working on those settlements after they signed Cam Newton. Those things were in the works for a long time. They knew they were getting something back from those two things, whether it was going to be 7 or 6 or 5. They knew they were going to have more money, and yet they do it after Newton signs on it. So, I mean, if I'm a player, I look at that and go, what the hell did you just do to me? And so I wonder how he's going to respond to that. You know, never mind if they actually do go sign somebody. I mean, if I and we're going to talk about this coming up. If I'm Cam Newton, I'm looking at the guards saying, how much are you paying your guards, by the way?
Right.
Boy, you got a lot of money in the guards. What about the other guys? So I do think, you know, I get the point. I've heard it before. I hope the Patriots don't hold themselves to that. I mean, they do. They, you know, we pay Julian Edelman X, so we can't pay this receiver Y, which is why we can't go get a good receiver. And I would like to, you know, I know they do that, but I think it's vastly overrated because – I don't know. It's pro sports. These are big boys. This is the deal. Sometimes a guy times out, right? He's a free agent at the right time, and the team has the money in the right year, and so he gets more than he should. It's just the way it works. Like, you don't think players can understand that? I think the Patriots use that as an excuse, Maz, in other words.
Oh, look, Edelman, above all else, he's been screwed over the years, if you ask me. Like, Edelman has been worth more to the Patriots operation than they pay him. But, I get what they try to do. They try to maintain that salary structure in their locker room. And this is where Brady undercut a lot of people along the way. And just as a quick aside, by the way, I love the fact that Brady's now getting called out for not coming to bat. And even if it is people like Odell Beckham who are calling Brady to task for not being more vocal on league issues, because Brady has never, you know, the one real negative, if you're a teammate or another player in that league, of Tom Brady, is that he never really did much for the cause. And I mean that of the player cause and the union and that sort of thing with regard to salary structure and player rights. Brady had more leverage than he wanted to. And with regard to the salary structure of the Patriots, he let them establish it that way.
Okay, so we started off Red Sox. We still got items on the calls on the board for that. Gave you a Bruins minute about leadership and the things that are at stake for that team. Still got calls on the board at that. We got some football now, some follow-up Cam Newton thoughts. We have this deadline for Joe Tooney to sign an extension before the franchise tags become permanent at 4 o'clock. So we've got a little bit of a deadline situation today. In the next 45, 44 minutes, we could get some news on Joe Tooney. People are saying, and the reporting is that there won't be a deal, but, you know, things sometimes can surprise you. So you got 45 minutes on that. That's going to lead to another discussion about the Patriots payroll. That's on the table. We'll take calls on all of it right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Say it.
I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Yes, they did.
Well, you said it. You said it. I can prove that you said it. You said it.
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Man, I got a call, and my agent hit me. I was, you know, no cap. I was working out. And he was like, hey, man, you know, we just got an interest from a team. I'm like, okay, cool. Who? And he was like, New England. I said, hold on. Like, how is me and Belichick going to mesh? You know what I'm saying?
Because that was the first thing I thought.
Because it's like perception. But it also, it's like this, too. It's like, okay, like, can we not? We have to talk about the elephant in the room. And it's like, you know you who you coming after. You know? And I'm like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
What he was, what he is great. Needs no even talking about it. But one thing about it, though, you, Coach McDaniels, you able to call some stuff that you ain't never been able to call now. All right, you know, and I told, hey, you getting a dog? You get, you getting one of these ticked off dogs too? That's like, bro.
That's Cam Newton on Odell Beckham's YouTube channel the other night. Played the crap out of that stuff yesterday. But there's the point with the offense and Cam Newton. You're now 3rd-and-3. You've got one of the most proficient third down short yardage runners in the NFL. And he's pissed off at the world. He's a dog. And so what are you going to do? You turn him loose? Go ahead. He's all that pissed off and he wants to prove everybody wrong. You turn him loose and you dial up those plays, Maz, right?
Oh, absolutely. Again, just to give you some more of the particulars, because I told you in the 9 years he has played. And remember, this includes a season that he didn't play at all, really, last year. I mean, it was 2 games, I think it was, right? And then he was gone. So in that span, he averages almost 6 yards a rush on 3rd and 4th down. So that's just a huge thing to have in your back pocket when you're an offensive coordinator and you say, worst case, this thing breaks down, Cam takes off, we pick up 5.7. Like, that's, you know, it's just, if that's not part of his game, I don't know how they can make it work and be better off than they would be with someone else playing the position. They got to let him run.
And the only way it wouldn't be part of his game at this point is because of health, which, again, is the caveat you just have to keep going with this guy.
Well, then I wouldn't put him on the team. If I can't run him, then I'm not. There's no point in Cam Newton being on your team. Carmine in Abington, what do you think, Carmine?
So I'm looking at the Ravens' offense last year and this misdirection, and it's not. You're not looking for big bombs. You're just moving the chains, and that's what Brady was good at. But this misdirection offense is doing the same thing. It's moving the chains. So do you think that the coaching staff thinks they can try to replicate that, but do one step better because they're the Patriots coaching staff?
Well, and
throw in different wrinkles and stuff like that. And then just a real quick joke I heard, the Redskins.
We don't do jokes.
Yeah, no jokes.
I don't want to do I don't want to turn the whole offense over, Maz. I want it situational, like Phil Perry wrote in the thing that you're talking about. I feel like the Ravens offense is a little too tricked up for my taste and probably Belichick's.
The Ravens last year ran almost 600 times for over 3,000 yards. Like, that's I don't want to say wishbone type of offense, you know, but that's what that thing is. That is a run first offense. I think with Newton, you still want a pass first offense, at least as it pertains to him. You certainly don't want him running that much, but the whole idea of, you know, controlling the ball, that wouldn't surprise me that if it's short passes and, you know, running game, and the whole idea is you're going to have longer drives and, you know, just slow the game down a little bit, like that I could see, but I don't think they're going to be the Ravens. I don't think they have that in mind.
It's got to be more balanced than that. And they wouldn't be able to do it with him anyway because of the beating he's taken. Even if he's quote unquote healthy, he won't last if you try to do that.
Yeah, and look, to state the obvious too, Lamar Jackson's faster.
Right.
He's a lot faster. I mean, you can, you know, Lamar Jackson can break one for 60 yards and take off. I'm not sure Newton has that type of burst anymore.
Jim in Providence has a Bruins thought. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, Mike, you're smart enough to know the definition of insanity. How could you possibly think this NHL season for the Bruins is going to go any different than the last 10, other than the Thomas year? This guy is a complete puddle in the playoffs.
What
and you
guy?
Know who I'm talking about.
What? No, who?
Bum.
Who?
That's what they were talking about at center ice. How do we prevent this bum from blowing another playoff series for us?
Okay, so they're talking about Tuukka Rask crapping himself. Jim, thanks for the call. Tuukka Rask crapping himself again. That's what that huddle was at center ice.
Yeah, well, it could be that too. You know, like, we got a lot at stake here. It's going to be 40 that ruins it for us again because we can't trust them.
So I said, you know, that group has a lot at stake legacy-wise. You know, they're an all-time Bruins team. If they win one more, if they come up short, they're sort of viewed as chokers. Chara has that on the line. Bergeron has that on the line. No one has more on the line than Rask. No one, for this reason, Jim in Providence and the rest of you Bruins fans, this is going to be a tough pill to swallow, but what I'm about to say is pretty much a fact. Tuukka Rask is the greatest goalie in Bruins history. He is. I think you could put up stats that would show you that, but I don't know if there's been another goalie who has been at the top of the league for as long as Tuukka Rask has. Cheevers wasn't. I mean, he won, but was he, you know, I mean, Tuukka Rask for basically, well, it's going on 8-9 seasons now, has been a guy sniffing Vezina votes almost every year. Well, name another Bruins goalie.
Tim well, Thomas. Best, yeah, best regular season well, goalie in team history.
Well, hold on. Let me put it a different way then. He's had the best career of any Bruins goalie.
Okay, neat.
Regular season.
Well, okay, so this is my point.
Cowboys fans could probably say the same thing about the Tony Romo.
This is my point. That you could make the case that he's the greatest goalie in Bruins history, and you hate him. Right? I tell you that you could make the statistical case that he's the greatest goalie in Bruins history, and Big Jim Murray sticks his finger in his mouth. And Jim in Providence says that choking, you know, finish, he goes finish on me. He calls it this choking bum. And you can't stand him. And it's because he's never won.
Yeah. So hey, I mean, you can make that statistical case for Wes Welker, maybe being the best Patriots wide receiver of all time. And I hate him.
So there is no one who is more at stake than Rask. He changes the entire narrative if he wins. If he wins and he breaks through and gets the cup, then we look at him. If he never wins here, the fact that he might be the best goalie in the history of the franchise and have put up the best career of any goalie in Bruins history, which I think you can make that case, no one's going to care. No one's going to mention it. He's not going to be credited as such. He's got to win it. So no one is more at stake than that guy. No one.
I mean, in a lot of ways, like, part of me feels bad for him. Okay, and I you know, I don't mean to show my humanity. I know that's not allowed.
No, but in some ways it's unfair because
he was so good last year. He was so good in the playoffs and then game seven.
Until he wasn't in the biggest moment.
So that
all crapped their pants in game seven, every one of them.
He needs it, but he's the goalie. It begins and ends there in that spot. And so he needs it. Needs it. For Bergeron, Char, the rest of those guys, it'd be nice. It'd be a real big legacy enhancer. They need it, too. Rask needs it with a capital N. It is, he's viewed as an entirely different guy based on whether they win it or lose it or he can break through. Guy in Boston on Cam Newton. Hi, Guy.
Hey, Maz, listen. I want Maz to know. You're talking about 195 first downs. You're talking about a quarterback that went to 13 AFC titles. 9 Super Bowls and won 6 of them, and you're talking about 195 first downs. And by the way, when you see Greg Bedard, tell him someone spotted him stocking shelves in Walgreens. Bye. Thank you.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I hope that's not true. I was talking to Jimmy when he was going through his stats. What do you think he was driving at there, Mass?
Well, I think he's trying to tell me that Cam Newton can't hold a candle to Tom Brady, which we know. I mean, that's not the point. The point is that when we talk about Newton's passing game, okay, it's not great. That's not what makes Cam Newton unique. What makes him unique is the ability to just run and pick up 6 yards at any given time, particularly on those gotta-have-it critical plays, third and fourth down, when the game is in the balance and the game is on the line. And that part of it, and this was the essence of Phil Perry's story the other day. And again, it was a nerdy stat story, but some of that stuff, the situational stuff with Newton, fascinates me more than anything because I wonder how they're going to use him. Bill Belichick believes in situational football. Those key spots, this was the essence of that story. Cam Newton is really hard to defend in those spots when he's right. When he's right. And so you put him with Belichick on third and three, third and four. How much harder do the Patriots come to how much harder are the Patriots to stop in those situations? And I think they could be pretty difficult to deal with.
And let's just, again, define the statement that better than they were with Tom Brady. No one's saying that over the last 20 years that you'll get anywhere close to that, or if we're talking about the balance of their career, or even Brady as he stands right now. But if we framed it and say, can you be better offensively, better situationally than you were in the second half of last year with Cam Newton? I think the answer is yes.
That's a win, yes.
I thought the answer was yes with Jared Stidham, for crying out loud.
Me too.
It's a pretty low bar. If you, in the second half of last year, the Patriots ranked, you had the stat, Maz. What did they rank in points in the second half of last year?
Oh, they were like 21st or something. I don't have it in front of me, but it was in the 20s.
In the second half of last year, they were a bottom third offense, in that range. So can you be better than that with a good defense and home field in the playoffs? Like, that to me should be the comparison, not Newton better than Brady or like that's just silly talk. But can you be better than you were at the end of last year when sort of the wheels had come off? And the answer should be yes on that. Tommy and Lynn, quickly on the Bees.
Yes, this playoff thing for the Bruins, they have a lot of key veteran players, and it will help the younger players in this format. And I want them to win the cup because I want to see Rask get one. What are you guys' inputs on this one?
Okay, Tommy. I hope you sent a video into the team. We'll be seeing you during the playoff games, dancing to Shipping Up to Boston.
Remember, we want the slow buildup.
Rask with the save.
The young guy, old guy thing, does the layoff help young teams or old teams? I think that is, I don't know the answer. Frankly, it could go either way. Like, I don't know how to handicap that. I think the old guys could be tremendously benefited from the rest, but then again, it takes them longer to get going. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. I think what's going to matter is, do you give a crap? Do you give a crap, and is your team professional? That's what I think. Those are the teams that are going to benefit. Do you really think you have a chance to win a championship? And if you do, then you're going to invest in your bubble and invest in all that time away from your family, and you'll put up with it. If you think you don't have a chance, you're some sort of marginal team, or you get down in a series, then I think you're going to see some teams pack it in. Why are we even here? Can I go home? But if you're the Bruins and you have a real chance for a championship, and there's guys with a certain age who need it, I'd like to think the investment is there. That should be an advantage. And I also think they're a very professional button-down operation with good leadership, keeping guys in the bubble, keeping guys out of the club, doing the right thing, being responsible. I think those teams are going to have a big advantage. So I think the Bruins have both of those things. Okay, that's the good news with the Bruins. The bad news is they're also chokers. So they could do the right thing, be totally professional, totally motivated, and then get to game 7, and then what are they going to do? What are they going to do? So that's a whole nother story. Continue with your thoughts. Murray's update when we come back. The return of football. I haven't talked about it much. The Patriots finally released a plan about games at Gillette and reduced crowd capacity. Want your thoughts. Want to take your temperature on that. On going to a game at Gillette with 14,000 fans. You thumbs up or thumbs down on that? Murray's update first and right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Whee!
It's way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, return to football. We haven't really covered the story much. I just assume it's happening. The NFL is going to plow through everything. Are they, Murray? Are we sure it's coming back? We good?
Yeah, I think there's too much money at stake. They'll find a way. I mean, I can understand the concerns, and, you know, you hear the CDC today say that the fall is just going to be a complete nightmare, but I think that the NFL is just too greedy. There's too much money at stake, whether it's TV rights and anything else, so they're going to find a way. They're going
to
play.
I'm curious why they're so reluctant to even just push it back a little bit. Like, why? I understand them being reticent to cancel games. Then you're losing inventory, you're losing money. But if you play a schedule October through March versus September through February, what's the diff? Right? And I'm surprised they've been so reluctant to even just do that, Maz. Do you have a thought?
Well, so I wonder if the logic is, well, if we just want to push it back a little, what if the numbers get worse? Like, in other words, everybody is predicting this, you know, resurgence in the fall. And the idea is we're better off starting when our chances are better, and then we can just continue and plow through it, versus if we put it off and the numbers go up, then they're going to tell us we can't start at all.
Well, they're going up now. It's like, I don't know.
I know. In some places, how
it could be any worse. But be that as it may, I mean, what I really think it's going to happen is because I know the players' union is not going to do anything to stand in the way. I mean, they may claim they are, and they're, you know, they're bickering back and forth right now, and they're trying to come to terms on some things. But at the end of the day, is the players' union going to stand in the way of anything? When has that players' union stood in the way of football in the last 30 years or whatever, for crying out loud?
Even in 2011, when it looked really dire, it finally got to a point where, you know, I think the lower-level players were like, listen, I need that paycheck.
Yeah, didn't it get settled in June or July or something? Like, and we weren't even close to losing games.
Yeah.
They didn't even lose any preseason games.
It got late into the summer, though. I remember thinking, like, oh, they're actually going to have this lockout. And then, again, it got to a point where guys are like, I need that money.
So, I mean, I think the same thing's going to happen here, and that's why I think we have football more than anything. They're not going to get true resistance from the players' union, and not that they ever do. And it was also released by the Patriots for their plan, if there are to be games at Gillette Stadium and fans are allowed by the government at Gillette. Gillette is expected to host only 20% of its total capacity, according to a memo issued by the team yesterday. The venue can hold, obviously, 65,000, which means no more than 13,175 will be permitted on game days. And I think that the first people who have the chance to do it are Putnam Club holders and season ticket holders, right?
Correct.
Okay. So let me ask you, Murray Maz, sports fans, football fans, would you want to go in this climate right now, in the COVID climate, to Gillette to watch a football game with 13,000 other fans?
Maz?
I might say yes, because I like the whole tailgating thing. And so, to me, that's a big part of the experience. And, you know, if you're spread out in there, that number of people, I would lean yes, believe it or not.
I'm going to be a hard no on this. I am not going to anything with over 25 people. I don't want to be in any kind of vicinity, even though you're outside. I get that. I'm good. No. Anything where there's a lot of people, I want no part of.
Okay. I have a hard time gauging you, Murray. So you take the virus and the pandemic seriously.
I mean, I think, look, I said this while you were on. I just feel like even at the highest levels, nobody knows what the hell the deal is with this thing. I mean, so much information changes by the minute, let alone the day. So I'm just going to, you know, I'll just follow the rules and hope for the best. So okay. I am a little uncomfortable with being in an area where there's a lot of people. I wouldn't
Mike,
go to
what
Disney.
Are you?
I wouldn't go to a game. I'm good.
Okay. Hard yes. I finally want to go to a game. Like, I have avoided that place since I stopped covering the team, like the plague. Because I think, generally speaking, I don't love the experience.
Right, you went to that Packers game and were miserable.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's the just so much about it. But it's largely the egress, and it's getting in and out. It's just, it's ridiculous. It's a seven-hour day, for crying out loud. I can't, even though it's football and I love it and it's once a week, I don't have that kind of time, you know? So it's like, I don't think it's a very interesting stadium or a really super atmosphere. I mean, it's okay, but I think it's a relatively quiet stadium, and getting out is such a pain in the balls. You can't stay for the whole thing anyway. And it's just like, maybe I went to too many games when I covered the team. I was there every day for 10 straight years or whatever, and so now I'm, like, going in the other direction. But Now you're telling me, wait a minute, now you're telling me that it's going to have only one out of five people are allowed to go. Only 13,000 people are going to be in that building. The parking's free, right? Which it was 50 or whatever.
Or more, yeah.
More, right? Or at least 50, 60, 100. Like, you know, so the parking's free. I'll have no traffic in or out. I don't have to go elbow to elbow with every Tom, Dick, and Harry in a Teddy Bruschi jersey.
Not in that order.
And I can spread out. So I get to spread out, waltz in, waltz out, not pay. I suddenly want to go to a game again. That's the first time I felt like going to a Patriots game in a long time. I'm in.
Yeah, it would be easier compared to how it usually is, but I still think you're asking for maybe three people in the bathroom at one time. Like, I don't want to be around a lot of people in a contained place, so, even if it's outdoors.
See, I feel the outdoors, and it's just like, no one knows, Murray, right? So it's just like how you feel. I feel relatively safe outdoors, even in large numbers. Now, I don't want to be in a packed beer garden. You know, I wouldn't want to be outside with 65,000 people. So, like, I'm not saying that. But, you know, I've gone to the beach plenty, and everyone's sort of spread out, and there's a bunch of people on the beach, but I just feel...
When we get into thousands, though, I'm a little uncomfortable, because I've continued to eat outside at restaurants. Like, that I'm comfortable with, but you're capped at around 20, maybe 30 people that are all spread out, and that's all fine. When you get into thousands, even
though you're
all
masked up? What if they're all masked up? They're all wearing their Brewski masks.
Yeah, I know, and I know by this email yesterday sent to all these season ticket holders and Putnam holders, like, you need to be required to wear the mask. You got to drink, though. Do you think? I mean, the masks are going to come off. People are going to, like, have to talk and yell and scream and have beers. And, like,
But we're all so spread out.
I don't trust humankind for the greater good right now. I just don't.
I don't trust humankind, period.
Well,
I don't
know.
Murray, you talk about the bathrooms. Dude, if there are 13,000 people in the stands, I'm going in the 300 level. That's where I'm going.
Right. Spread out. You don't think people, for the most part, have worn their masks and done the right thing around here?
Yeah.
No, not totally.
For the most part. For the most part. But still, I don't know. Again, your inhibitions change when you've had a couple of drinks.
Totally.
So I finally ate somewhere inside over the weekend, and going into it, I was actually pretty paranoid. After two drinks, I'll tell you, I was like, whatever. Yeah. So how do you think that's going to feel at a football game when people are amped up with the new quarterback in Cam Newton? They get some beers in them. It's like, yeah, don't worry about it, kid. We're fine. We're outside anyway. Like, it's just, it all goes by the wayside once liquor gets involved.
Yeah, maybe I'm overlooking the real reality. I don't know. All I know is the problem with most things are people. So, right. I mean, I love going to football games. I enjoy the experience. It's just the people that ruin it, whether it's the traffic or the people in the stadium or whatever. The people are the problem. You take away the people, like, I'm sort of back in.
Right.
Like, and that's sort of like how I feel about it.
Yeah, Felger, there's only 13,000 here, but we still think you suck.
It's just, so I don't know, going to a football game in a very sparsely populated or empty stadium has a little bit of appeal to me. And sit there with all my friends. All right, so there's my thought on that. Take your calls on all of it. I do want to start to hit on this franchise tag deadline, which now comes your way in 12 minutes. The Patriots have 12 minutes to sign Joe Tooney to a contract extension, and if they don't, he is locked into that franchise tag, making him one of the top five highest-paid guards in the NFL at over $14 million guaranteed. So if that doesn't happen in the next 12 minutes, that's the deal. How do we feel about that and how the Patriots have managed their money? We'll hit on that story and this tag deadline right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for. It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hunter Henry, the Los Angeles Chargers star tight end, he's another one who is expected to play on the one-year franchise tag this year. No long-term deal expected. And the Chargers, like a lot of teams, just at this point have not committed huge, huge money for extensions considering the economic uncertainty. Joe Tooney from the New England Patriots, in a similar point, no long-term extension expected there.
and we can keep adding to the list. Dak Prescott ain't going to happen, reportedly. You said Ngakoue and Jacksonville not going to happen, right, Murray?
Correct, yeah. It's not going to happen with Ngakoue. It's not going to happen with Dak Prescott. It's not going to happen with A.J. Green with Cincinnati. But it does look like the Titans and Derrick Henry are reaching a long-term deal.
Oh, stupid.
Right.
Oh, Vrabel's getting stupid. You know, Let's pay Ryan Tannehill like a real franchise quarterback, and now let's invest heavily in your running back.
Big mistake.
He and John Robinson, who also came from the Patriots. Don't you know how to be Patriots?
Stupid!
You guys doing?
Oh, my God. So what are they talking about with numbers?
No numbers yet on Henry.
It'll be too much. It'll be ridiculous. A wonderful player. I mean, look, I like the player. I like watching him play. He was huge for him last year.
But last year felt like lightning in a bottle.
Don't you know the track record? He's already damaged goods. It'll be 1 or 2 years, and that'll be it. At most, if not halfway through this year. What are you doing?
I mean, I'm surprised by this one, too, because I think his franchise number this year is over $10 million. And I thought, well, on 1 year, $10 million, that's not horrible for Tennessee, given how important he is to their offense in the short term.
That's right.
But long term, I don't like it. And look, I'll double check it, but I don't think he's a huge factor in the passing game either.
Well, the point is, if the franchise tags $10 million, he's making at least $10 million a year.
He's
not going to sign for less than that. And, you know, probably 2 or 3X on the guarantee for a running back. Well, anyway, in a related story, if Joe Tooney signs, which he will probably in the next 4 minutes, or that deadline passes, they don't sign him to a long-term extension in the next 4 minutes, he plays under the franchise tag at $14.78 million. How do you feel about Joe Tooney at $14.78
million? Oh,
sorry. Hold on.
Well, I'm just making sure I had it ready.
Oh, good God. That was premature there.
Well, that's all right.
Keep it in your pants, young man.
I didn't realize my take was quite that hot. But anyway, look, I don't like the idea of paying one guard that sort of money, let alone two. And again, Shaq Mason's a little bit lower, but Tooney right now is, the second highest paid guard in the league. And that is crazy to me that you'd be paying. Now, look, that you'd be paying him that sort of money. Now, under the circumstances, do I want the team to have a strong offensive line? Yes, of course. I mean, I'll take strength anywhere I can get it. And I think that Tooney's been a good player, so I'll grant people like Greg Bedard that one. But between Tooney and Mason, the Patriots are hauling in basically about 25 or dishing out about $25 million to two guards, and that just does not feel like a good use of their resources.
It's preposterous. It's preposterous.
It's just not them. And I like him a lot, but that's a real big number for a guy like that.
This opens up a bigger picture conversation, but this is the headline to me. When it comes to cap management and roster management, my God, are the Patriots overrated?
They've butchered it right now. They've butchered it.
Do you folks overrate them? Now, look, I think individually they're good on contracts, which is, you would think, you know, one would lead to the other. But I think on individual contracts, you know, they'll wait somebody out like Cam Newton, or they'll beat somebody up at the negotiating table and win a contract battle like you read about. And so, like, they're good in the individual, you know, when it comes to, you know, that sort of thing, you know, battling it out a contract or waiting out a contract or reading the market, they are generally really, really good. But their quote-unquote roster management or cap management, I'm sorry, it's more like everybody else's. It is. They make mistakes. They overpay. They get into years and situations where they have to let players go because they can't afford them. They have positions that are out of whack financially, just like everybody else. They make good moves and bad. They run into good years and bad, just like everybody else. Yet you all think it's like this master chessman. You know, Bill's playing chess and Bill's playing checkers. Like, I hear all the time about all this great cap room the Patriots are going to have next year, right? Like, they're going to have almost $100 million, depending on the revenues in the pandemic, but that's what it was before the pandemic. You know, $100 million next year. Look at all this room. Look at all this flexibility. Ignoring, never mentioning the fact that they put themselves completely in a pickle this year. They completely butchered the thing this year. So, like, but you know, people will go on and on giving all this credit to the Patriots for the room they have next year, totally ignoring what garbage their cap and their payroll is this year. Like, I don't understand you people. when you look at their payroll, like, for example, Vinny, you showed me this earlier before on the simulcast, you know, the team rankings by position, money spent, you know, where the Patriots rank in money spent per position. Can you give me the offensive numbers that you have up there, Vinny? Because this is going to, you know, tell you what I mean. Like, you know, for example, when I say they don't know, you know, that they're not that special when it comes to this. Okay. In terms of spending by position, they rank fourth in the NFL at running back. They rank 30th at quarterback. They rank fifth on the offensive line. And if we can narrow that down to guard over tackle, I think they're number one. But they don't parse it out like that. Overthecap.com just does it by position. So they're fourth at running back, fifth on the offensive line, 30th at quarterback, and 11th at wide receiver. How are they 11th at wide receiver? The receivers blow. So it's like, does that feel... So first of all, their offensive line, I think, is pretty good. But to be the highest spending team at guard, is that what you want to be?
No.
And do you want to be the... How are they fourth in the league at running back spending when, I'm sorry, all of their running backs kind of suck?
Yeah, they're all... I'd say James White's pretty good.
So that's an overstatement. But let me say that they are fourth in the NFL in spending at running back. And I don't think they have a single bell cow back. I don't think they have a single guy. I think they've got a really nice third down player in James White. And then I think the rest are just Jags, as far as I know.
Totally. Michelle Burkhead, Harris, who hasn't played.
Swap in one, take out the other. They're just disposable razors. They're just guys. There's nothing special about anyone else other than James White in a third down situation. Yet the Pats, so I don't think you ever want to be in the top four in spending at running back ever. Even you got Earl freaking Campbell. That's not what you're looking at. You don't want to spend at that position. You don't have to spend at that position. So being number four at running back is bad enough. But then not to even have really a good running back? Look, how do you manage your payroll like that so you're fourth at that worthless position and not even have anyone good at it? Never mind guard. They have two of the top 15 paid guards in the NFL, Maz?
Yes, correct. And the only other team that falls into that category is the Raiders. And the Raiders just barely qualify because Richie Incognito is tied with Shaq Mason at the number 15 spot. And so, but the, you know, again, the Patriots have Tooney up at number two. So, you know, that, to me, that just feels like an astronomical amount of number to, or money rather, to be paying at that position. That's ridiculous. To pay that kind of dough at guard, really, is ridiculous. That is stupid. I'm sorry. I just think that's way too much money there for you know what you get. Now, look, those. I'll tell you, if Mason and Tooney are healthy, are they good players? Yeah,
no, we're talking, but I think we're you talking could, Hog Hannah here, like for crying out loud.
Right, you should be able to get 85% of those two players for about 20% of the salary. The way the Patriots throw those kinds of metrics in your face all the time, or I should say Patriots fans, I find it insane that they have that kind of money tied up in those two guys.
Bill used to feel the guard position was interchangeable, system guys, street guys, low-round draft picks. You can get away with a lesser-named player because it's the system and the players around him, and that's not a position you should overspend at. You should spend at different positions and have the guard position be a system guy. And they did it for years. And they drafted Mankins at the end of that first round in 05, and it sort of changed from there. But to have their six highest paid players by cap number, their six highest paid guys, Tooney is second, Cannon is fifth, Shaq Mason is sixth. So Tooney, Cannon, and Mason take up three of your top six highest slots on your payroll. Is that a well-constructed team? Is that a well-constructed payroll? I think that's...
No.
I mean, I think that's crap.
And so, look, I'm okay with there being money on the offensive line, but I just don't want it a guard. So that's the thing. Is
what's
if
Marcus
you were to
Cannon?
Tell me, well, so with Cannon, I'm worried about. And again, even Isaiah Wynn, you would say first-round pick, a lot of ability there. I still need to see him do it for a whole season. And if you were to tell me in the aggregate that they have the fifth highest paid offensive line in the league, which is, I think, what it is. I'm okay with spending money on the line, but I think they've spent it in the wrong places on the line.
So, for crying out loud, who are their Pro Bowlers? You know, I know the big boy, who we'll talk to later, tells us Tooney should be. They don't have any Pro Bowlers. Do they have any Pro Bowlers in that group? So you've got this highly paid offensive line, and I think it was good a couple years ago. It was hot garbage last year. It wasn't good last year. So I think this genuflecting at Belichick, the GM, is just, this is another example of it. I think as a coach, he deserves all those accolades and all that genuflecting. And I think as a coach, you know, he's the hoodie and the genius. I think he's worthy of those labels. I really do. When it comes to his GM work, I'm sorry. He is closer to everybody else than he is anything special. I think he's good, but it, you know, he has good years and bad. And if you look at their payroll and their roster this year, how could you say they've managed it well? I mean, and the guard thing and the Tooney thing is just another example. Your second highest paid player this year will be a freaking guard. I mean, that ain't, I'm sorry, that is not a well-managed payroll. I want to pick this up on the other side. First, Murray's update, the very latest, that deadline has passed. So here's the hard news on that franchise deadline across the league, and then back to discuss this more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.